Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. On today's show, Dennis and I will talk about Sandy the Superstorm, solar farms, Howard County's cookie lady, and more accolades for Howard County. Dennis,
more accolades.
Ken's going to be so excited. And joining us as today's guest is Maryland State Comptroller Peter Francho, who will help us dissect the news this week and talk about the election, which, thank God, is finally here.
It's finally here. We're in the final stretch.
But first, a word from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Explore the diverse cultures of Bangladesh, India, Nepal, Pakistan, and more with entertaining demonstrations, music, displays, and food at the South Asia Culture Cafe. Presented by Columbia Association and the Howard County Library System, the South Asian Culture Cafe will take place on Saturday, November 4th, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Miller Branch Library. For more information, please call 410-715-3162 or email international@columbiaassociation.org. That's international@columbiaassociation.org. This message has been brought to you by Columbia Association.
All right, Dennis, what do you have to get us started on the local news front?
Well, the big news, well, last week, you know, Frankenstorm rolled into town, and Maryland dodged the bullet. I mean, we were pretty lucky.
I think that storm over the summer was much worse.
For the record, my electricity went out.
Did
just
it?
Want to make sure
did
people
it?
Don't think I get special.
You know, it's
so what happens with that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, do you call? You're Pepco in Montgomery County, right?
Pepco, right. Every neighbor on my street comes and knocks on the door. Says, aren't you good for something?
I'm just a controller.
Ken Ullman actually was on BAL, I think, on either late Monday or Tuesday and we had about 10,000 out in Howard County. And he said, and I'm one of them. He made a point. Make sure everybody knew
Ken's
that.
Ken's a good guy, and he does a good job in Howard County. And, it's a great county. Obviously, as the tax collector, I look on Howard County as the breadbasket of the state. I mean, it's...
Yeah, we'd like to spend a little less time here.
Yes. Most people would. But it's a wonderful area, and it's got great leadership. And I always salute Ken wherever I go because... you know, it's just a well-run county.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, and I wasn't going to go there, but as you comment on it, I couldn't help but notice this week, and it was a pretty... First of all, I give kudos to the weather people because they called this one. They said it was coming, and thankfully it didn't hit us as bad as they said it could have. But what really hit me is here we are in the middle of a very contentious presidential election, and yet at the end it was pretty bipartisan. I mean, Governor Christie and President Obama, you know, kind of hand in hand.
Oh, my God, and the pundits had a field day with that. Now, what does this mean?
Right.
You know, Governor Christie was nice to Obama. What does that mean?
I almost ran out and tried to find O'Malley. But, no, I'm kidding, Governor. Just kidding.
He was probably in Washington on Face the Nation.
No, you put your finger on something that I think is very real, Dennis, which is we have so much partisan, negative, toxic kind of campaigning going on. Everybody just rolls their eyes at it. It's gotten much worse than in years gone by. And how the heck can you govern? I mean, you get into office and you've said so many bad things about everybody that...
Half the electorate hate you.
Well, and you spend the first...
And the other elected officials are completely, at arms with you. I can remember the old days, you know, the leaders of each party would get together and work out compromises when appropriate. Now it's like hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, they really that has changed.
And you spend the half...
I was pleased to see Christie and Obama together. Around the storm damage, and I think that's if we had more of that, we'd be better off as a country.
Yeah, it's a good example for the nation, I think.
Absolutely. It's a good thing.
Of course, we did have some damage here in Howard County. I mean, I say we dodged the bullet, but had a pretty major sewage spill as a result. You know, it's a weird failure. It was not only the power and the backup power, but the emergency generator gave out, too? And
I think there were two main lines coming in that were supporting that sewage facility treatment plant. And then there was a backup generator as well, and I think they all failed.
They all failed. I mean, that just doesn't happen. So
I think the important thing there is it shouldn't happen again, because that's a lot of
stuff.
It's a lot of poop. But you know, I mean, it shouldn't happen again. But I mean, three backup systems. I mean, that's pretty rare. I mean, how, at what point do you say, well, we've got enough backup systems? I mean, I don't know. I don't know that you can plan on all three falling at the same time. But anyway.
You done with the Sandy?
I'm done with the Sandy. I'm just glad we all survived. And I think everybody now has power again in Howard County.
I think so.
I think we're done.
And we ought to comment as well. You know, BG&E did a phenomenal job this time in getting power back up. I think they were prepared. I think they brought up crews from the south that came up to help. And I do need to point out, I heard this on the news this morning, and this was a disappointing thing, sort of the antithesis of the Governor Christie Obama thing. New York unions are turning away assistance that's coming up from down south from the utility companies the non-union guys. They're turning away the help.
That's New York.
That's pretty bare knuckle stuff, but you're right. Probably a hangover from the Tammany Hall days.
Yeah. Yep. So schools were out Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah.
I think the majority of them went back on Wednesday.
I want to say one school was still without power on Wednesday. I think Bowman Bridge or something like that.
But aside from that, new superintendent Foose has made a splash her first 100 days.
Oh my God, she's really coming like a house of fire.
So she, redistricting is always a huge thing in every community, and it's even more so here with the schools being what they are and the parents taking the school system here as seriously as they do.
It's one of those things you can't make anybody happy.
No, you can't. And there's a huge process here in Howard County, as there is in every community, for assessing how to redistrict. And the committee evaluated it, and they came up with a proposal. And Foose said, nope, don't like it. And she sent it back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
And now that's really upset a lot of people because they feel like her approach has been more short-sighted one. It's going to fix things on a short-term basis more so, but the long-term problem is going to be greater. So I think she's got her first sort of, not crisis, but she has her first black eye.
Yeah.
Amongst at least some people.
But she made a lot of people happy, though, as well. I mean, because some people were pretty upset about that.
Well, it's all about your kids. I mean, so it's if your kid gets to stay in a school, you're happy. If they have to move, you're not.
Yeah, but of course, and then she was in the news, and of course, the whole school board was in the news last night. I think was there a meeting last night? Yeah.
Two nights ago, I think.
There's this new Race to the Top grant program that Howard County has applied for. But in order to get the grant, they need sign-off not only from the school superintendent and the school board, but also the teachers' union. And the teachers' union in Howard County said, no, we don't. First of all, they're against Race to the Top. They said they weren't given proper notice, and they have an issue there.
I think it's true. They didn't get proper notice, and I think leadership of the school system, as I understand it, did fail. I mean, they only require 3 days notice pursuant to their bylaws. That's not a lot to ask, and they didn't get their 3 days notice. But I think the real story is they just don't like it, and they're using that as an excuse.
To his credit, Paul Lemley, the head of the union, contacted us. He'd like to come on the program and kind of give his side of the story because he got lambasted in one of the local blogs who used pieces of his memo to the union membership, and he said he didn't tell a full story. But I think the bottom line is the teachers don't like Race to the Top, and they wouldn't have, no matter how you shake it, they weren't going to vote for this anyway.
Well, we talked about it at lunch. I mean, I think teachers need to be held accountable, but at the same time, I think it's more than just the teachers, and their salaries, their job security shouldn't be completely tied to the success of their kids.
Can I say something
Absolutely.
Nice about the teachers' union?
Sure.
Which, they refused to take a position in support of Question 7, the gambling, this year.
Which is real interesting.
4 years
That's
ago, they were all for it because money was going to go for education, and then, lo and behold, no money went to education, no new money, and I think they smelled a rat and said, sorry, we're sitting on the sidelines for this one.
And, you bring that up. I got in the email that I got this morning from Paul Lemley, I actually put a post on my blog this morning about Question 7, about how it's one of the worst examples of Maryland lawmaking ever.
Yeah, no, yeah, and to their credit, the teachers are staying neutral because they don't want to be used as a political pawn by a bunch of casino owners. And because, that tugs at the heartstrings of voters. They want to help kids. They want to help education. And so they don't like gambling that much necessarily, but that was a big deal, I think, because that Apple ballot or whatever it is they put out, that counts for a lot of votes, and I think that Question 7 is in some trouble right now.
Yeah, it says he writes, I was very opposed to having educators sell out for that one.
Well, that's to their credit.
Yeah.
And we're going to come back to talk significantly about Question 7, but just to finish up with the school system, I think one of the funniest stories or sub-stories of this whole thing was a comment by Alan Dyer. And as those of our listeners that know Alan Dyer...
You know who Alan Dyer is?
Alan Dyer's on our Board of Ed, and he's just been a renegade. Uh-huh. He actually has a number of lawsuits pending against the Board of Education on which he serves.
Oh, right, I have read about that.
Yeah. I can't imagine how you couldn't. But, So I thought his quote was funny. He's been on the board for three and a half years.
Yeah, three and a half years.
And he said, this is is the first time that I feel I've had an opportunity as a board member to vote in favor of something I care deeply about.
First time in 4 years.
First time. So I want to congratulate Alan for finally finding something to support.
We're proud of you, man.
All right. Cookie Lady.
Oh, yeah, the Cookie Lady. Yes. Thank you. I forgot that was my... We've been criticized sometimes because a lot of our stories are kind of doom and gloom. So we always try to find a good story. And we have a great story this week because I love cookies. There's a lady in Howard County. Her name is Dyson. What's her name? Casey Dyson, who started a business called Cookie Ride. I'm sure she's collecting sales taxes on these. She's Cookie Ride is she delivers cookies to people on a little red scooter, and she posts on a Twitter account and her Facebook page where she'll be at various times. She's at soccer games and she's visited the fire stations in town. And apparently these cookies are pretty good, but she loves making cookies. Decided she wanted to get in business for herself. It's funny, in the article it says her husband got a job out at Fort Meade. We think we know what that's all about, and she wanted something to do. And she's making these cookies, and apparently, again, pretty popular. I give her credit for it. What I love about her is if you don't go on the Twitter feed and you don't go on Facebook to find out where she is, but you see her driving around on her little red scooter, cookie, honk, and she'll pull over and sell you a cookie. I mean, how good is that?
I love that.
How good is that?
There she goes, Dennis. Quick, grab her.
for the public safety, she does say she'll pull over into the nearest parking lot, too. Safety is a concern.
Or she was told it needed to be.
Right.
So Howard County's Department of Planning and Zoning approved the county's largest solar power station, and this is on the property owned by Randy Nixon and his family. It's been around forever.
Yeah.
They've had lots of weddings up there at the converted 19th century barn that sits up there. And I think he's really been struggling over the last several years figuring out what to do with this property. Rumor had it he ran into some financial issues and wasn't sure where it was heading. And sounds like he's at least found something to do with a portion of the property, and it's going to be taken over by a solar company.
Yeah,
they're going to actually generate solar power.
It's a private enterprise. This is not a publicly subsidized, or I guess all solar power is probably subsidized. But in Maryland, the power companies are mandated to generate a certain percentage of their energy from alternative methods.
That's part of their... public concern about not building new generating plants. So the legislature says conserve electricity and come up with alternatives. So this sounds like a good thing. I'm still looking around for the cookie lady, though.
Yeah. Cookie lady, if you're making a visit to the mall today, come by. We'll
if you don't find her, maybe after the show we'll take him. We'll buy you a cookie somewhere else. they're going to actually install, I think, 10,400 solar panels, and it's going to generate 2 megawatts, which is enough to power apparently hundreds of homes.
That's
kind of cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. Poker guy?
Okay, yeah, poker guy. I was looking for the story here. Greg Merson, I believe, Reservoir High School grad, local Howard County boy, made good. World Series of Poker out in Las Vegas. Bought home $8.5 million I guess he's the world champion. A poker.
Peter was waiting for him at the airport when he came off his gate.
I love it. Before we actually went on, we were talking to Peter, and the story goes on to say how when Greg, and Greg's story is really a story of he's overcome a lot of things to get to this where he was. And the guy's truly a local boy. He wore a Baltimore Orioles jersey as he played in his final hand. But he went through some tough times of his own. And
losing a lot of money playing poker?
Well, no. He dealt with some addiction issues and some other struggles. He dropped out of University of Maryland, but he stayed true to his poker. And he obviously pretty good at it. But he... this was a real... His family was there for the game, and they were there when he won. And one of the prizes you get for winning is a $150,000 bracelet. Of course, Peter said, we'll be taxing that, too.
Imagine he'll be voting in favor of question 7.
Right. That's true. But, kudos to him and congratulations. I think he handled himself very well and obviously a very tense situation. I can remember a couple of years ago calling a gentleman who worked for Johns Hopkins who had just won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry.
Oh, no.
And I got him on the phone to congratulate him on winning the prize. His only question was, are you kidding me? I have to pay a tax on this? I said, yep, afraid so. And but anyway, hats off to him and his family. I think we're out there, and I agree with you. That Orioles jersey goes a long way.
Yep. Yeah, I was very, very, very happy for him. Local boy makes good. Always good to hear.
Whenever I bluff, I always lose.
Well, you know, part of his strategy, he wears sunglasses. The whole thing. So I guess that helps.
Didn't know that was allowed.
Neither did I.
So those that know Ken Allman know that his standard speech whenever he's in front of any group, he loves to tout how Howard County has made all these lists.
It's the best place to live. Second best.
So we've had a lot of fun finding other things to add to Ken's list, and we have two to add to his list today.
Yeah.
So the first is that Bloomberg magazine has rated Ellicott City near the top of its swinging singles spots.
Who knew?
We have a couple of people listening here. I got to tell you, I'm thinking that's really not it. What do you think, Kat?
Ellicott City doesn't first come to your mind when you think of swinging singles.
Well, they go on to explain it, and they apparently, by their count of Ellicott City's population of some 65,000 people, the median household income of single men is $80,500. And of those 65,000 people, 34% are single men. So it's all about the wallet.
Yeah.
That's what makes this a swinging singles place.
It's a little scary.
But it is a little scary because the other thing we have.
Good transition.
TripAdvisor has named Ellicott City to its 10 spookiest American getaways to celebrate Halloween.
Now, Halloween's over.
So if you want to meet a spooky guy and get rich, right? Come to Ellicott City.
Ellicott City is a great place. And you know, even Barbara Mikulski likes Ellicott City. Two weeks ago. Barbara, Senator Barbara, came and she did a walkthrough on Main Street with Courtney Watson.
Courtney Watson. I'm wondering if they were down there trolling for a single man.
Well, now...
Just kidding.
Now, Courtney's married, and I don't know. We won't go there. But, it's nice to see everybody kind of paying attention to Ellicott City. And I'm sure they got an earful from some of our local merchants because they don't hesitate to hold back. It's truly independent merchants on Main Street.
It's a great group, and they also look out for each other.
They do. They do. You were down there recently, weren't you?
Yes, I went down and just met with some folks and
heard a little bit about the parking.
Yeah, I heard an earful about the parking. Passed it along to the county executive, and
how was that received?
He promised he was going to take a look at it, but it's a kind of a dilemma because they have obviously parking needs down there, and some disagreement as to whether the meters are good or whether they should enlarge the parking lots, but thank goodness I'm the comptroller and can leave that to the county executive. But we did what they asked us to do, which was communicate with Ken, and I'm sure he'll be in touch with him.
You know, it's funny. Years ago in another life, I worked in the shopping malls for the Rouse Company and spent a lot of time interfacing with merchants. And we used to say that the complaints of the merchants go in direct correlation to the ring of the cash register.
Like, really?
When business is good, they got not a thing to say. But in the slow part of summer, early fall, you know, parking meters were a good thing to focus on.
So what was Jim Rouse like? He's such a legendary figure in Maryland's history.
A lot of people would like to say they knew what Jim Rouse's vision was. He was just a good guy. You know, it was a good company to work for. He was very approachable. There was really no, he didn't put on airs. I mean, Jim Rouse was about as down to earth as you could get. I do have a favorite Jim Rouse story. I was fresh out of college and with my marketing degree, and we were opening a model home park in the Village of King's Contrivance in Columbia. And they had, Rouse days, everything had to be just so. And they weren't content to have regular trash cans for the trash. They had these huge old wine casks because they were more rustic and more realistic looking. But the problem with the wine cask is that it's wider at the middle than it is at the top. So when you go to pull a full trash liner out of the bag, out of the middle, it tears because it's putting through the wrong hole and too big. And so about midway through the event, my boss comes through and he says, the trash cans are overflowing. And I said, yeah. I said, the crew is taking a lunch break. He looks at me and says, the trash bags are overflowing. And so my newly minted marketing degree, I started emptying trash cans. Of course, every time I did it, the trash went all over the place. And everybody walked over top of me and, you know, just threw trash on top of it. Except for one guy, Jim Rouse. He bent down and, you know, helped pick up the trash with everybody. Yeah. And I think out of all the people here today, he was the guy that, it's a story I'll never forget. And didn't make me feel bad. So my boss felt bad that he had told me to go pick up the trash. Well, he wasn't helping me at that point. But kind of funny. So that was what Jim Rouse was.
So pretty humble guy.
Pretty humble guy.
Being successful.
Yeah. Pretty amazing guy.
So we thought we'd spend a little bit of time talking about what we're calling the Big Four, which would be questions 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Uh-huh.
thought we would kind of focus on that a little bit with you.
Well, let's cut to the chase. 4 and 6, yes. 5 and 7, no. Got another question?
All right. Well, the
4 and 6, yes.
4 and 6, that's a Dream Act and
the marriage.
Marriage Equality Act.
Marriage
okay.
Equality. Those are things, obviously, Jim Rouse, who we were just talking about, anybody who's in favor of fairness, I think, would see the benefits of those. And as the chief financial officer, I can say 4 is important because this whole immigrant community that we have in the state actually contributes a lot to the economic activity.
But, you know, and, in talking to people, there's a lot of misconception about what the Dream Act is.
Yeah. The Dream Act, the question I think people are correct to ask that because it's not really a Dream Act. It's a pretty limited tuition bill that says has all sorts of conditions on it.
Has all sorts of, I mean, people are saying, well, it'll take money away from legal residents of Maryland.
No, probably. No, it's not going to do that. It's simply going to allow these undocumented kids that, provided their parents have paid taxes,
right,
which is where I come in, or and they've done well in high school and junior college for 2 years. It gives them in-state tuition for the last 2 years of four-year college in Maryland. I mean, it's a relatively modest thing. All I'm communicating to people out there is this immigrant community, particularly the Latino and the Asian American immigrant community, these folks contribute a lot of economic activity.
Sure,
it's not.
But like you say, they're paying taxes already. I mean,
yeah, this is not as well on this it does, but also the whole issue, because a lot of people get in my face about illegal immigrants, et cetera. It's, you got to have a little bit of balance here, folks, because you'd be surprised at the amount of taxes that are paid by this sector that's never collected because some of them don't have their documents. But having said that, I think 4 is a good measure. It's modest, doesn't have a big impact. 6, marriage equality, that's something that obviously is controversial, but I think most young people would say it's just a matter of fairness. And by the way, 10 years from now, none of us are even going to know why it was controversial.
Exactly. Exactly.
But those are two issues people can make up their minds about. I really urge people to look at 5, which is the congressional redistricting. This is
he's going to make the show really short if he keeps up on this.
He's going to just cut through the chase here.
Oh, you want to cut? Okay, I'm sorry. Jumping at your questions? I apologize.
No, it's good.
You're on a roll. Let's keep going.
No, 5 is a Annapolis special right out of the smoke-filled back rooms.
And 7 isn't?
7 is the step. It's really a good point you made. Both of them come out of the same smoke-filled back room. A couple of people back there. When you have that much power, absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's what we've got with questions 5 and 7.
I mean, they're an embarrassment. I mean, I think the congressional redistricting. I mean, how does that pass federal muster? I mean, I don't.
Congressional redistricting passes federal muster because of the way the statute is set up, but it sure doesn't pass the laugh test, and it makes Maryland into a state that's really mocked around the country because we're so over the typical Maryland. We've gone so far over the edge and gerrymandering these districts that they're worse than any other state's districts in the country. And when people say, hey, here's why gerrymandering is bad, up goes the poster with Maryland's districts.
Sure. I mean, here in Elkridge here in Howard County has 3 congressmen.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just mention why that's a problem. First of all, you don't know who represents you.
Right.
Second of all, when you can figure that out, you don't know who else they represent. It might be your neighbor. It might be a line in another congressman's district. That prevents the public from getting together and collectively speaking to their elected representatives. It broadens the power of the representative because they don't have to answer to the public, because the public doesn't know how to speak to them.
Right. It dilutes.
Dilutes. Obviously, it breaks up community of interest. And my view is that there ought to be an independent commission made up of Democrats, Republicans, and independents. No elected officials. Should be an elected official free zone.
Maybe pundits.
Have pundits, sure. bring you bloggers in.
But with all the special interests, does that really work? Even if you eliminated the elected officials, with all the special interest groups and the lobbyists and the donors, does that really work?
Yes, it does, because even partisan Democrats and Republicans, you put them together, if they're not actually elected officials, they conduct themselves with a lot of openness, transparency, integrity. They're, you know, it's just ordinary people. And so I think if we could get a commission, you'd see much, even though they have the power to send the same map back if we reject it on Tuesday, I hope people reject it and really work hard to get a commission. Howard County should be a leader in that because everybody out here believes in open government. And this is the essence of a couple of people in the back room with their crayons doing things that are totally in their self-interest.
What happens, let's say the voters do reject it and say no to it's question five, correct? The Senate say no to question five. What happens to the election then? You've got Roscoe Bartlett in a competitive race. I mean,
well, whoever wins those elections, their members, their congressmen for the next 2 years till the next election.
So that won't affect those elections.
It will not affect those elections, and it gives us a chance to ask for this independent commission. Even if we fail in that, Annapolis is not going to be able to bring the same map out just because they have the power to. They're just not going to be able to do that. And so I'm urging everybody to vote no on five because it's a check and balance on that absolute power. It's healthy. And I tell my fellow Democrats, we can win the same number of seats. That's not the issue. We don't have to put the fix in.
Good candidates
ahead
of
that. Thank you. And it actually hurts us as Democrats on the Eastern Shore because they create essentially a political graveyard for Democrats because that's where they put all the Republicans.
Right.
And a Democrat of stature will run against Andy Harris because the district's so gerrymandered for a Republican.
That's where we keep the Republicans in Maryland.
Well, that's...
But we largely have a one-party state, and they still can't figure out how to get stuff done, which is why we've had special session after special session,
true.
Too. So I'm not sure that this alone gives
Democrats...
Yeah,
but this question five really gets to the heart of what the problem is with Annapolis.
Mm-hmm. What do you think... How's it looking on that? I mean, is there...
It's a sleeper of an issue. There's been no polling, no advertising, a little bit of word of mouth through blogs and things like this. People, I think, understand that it's a bad deal for the public. The problem, of course, is that, Tammany Hall down there in Annapolis wrote the language on the ballot, which is the most misleading and deceptive language you could possibly have. I read it and almost said, I'm going to vote for it.
You've got it there, Paul, don't you?
I do. The ballot question.
Yeah, it talks about the Census Bureau and the U.S. Constitution. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it establishes the boundaries for the state's 8th United States congressional districts based on recent census figures as required by the United States Constitution.
Yeah, no, it looks like something that's completely ordinary and benign, and it isn't. It's really an example. Out of this kind of process by which this question five was produced, we get all sorts of other questionable deals, such as the gambling deal. And if you can vote no on this one, do, because it sends the right message.
Who actually writes the referendum questions?
The Secretary of State writes it, who's appointed by the governor.
Okay.
So it's all...
So let's jump from five, which is one sleeper, to seven.
Which is not a sleeper.
Six, which seems to be the other sleeper. There hasn't been a lot of advertising or media coverage of this issue of recent weeks.
Well, why is that? There was some polling done that showed that it was ahead, and there has been some ads on both sides. I've seen them.
Yeah, I've seen them on television.
This is obviously something that is individually very emotional, very controversial. And I'm just waiting for a few years down the road when the new generation comes up because there's so much more. They're not indifferent to this. They just are very curious as to why it upsets everybody so much because it's just not their. I think the future will bring a much lower temperature on issues like this.
What I hear when I talk to younger folks is, why is this an issue?
Right. And I don't think it's just younger folks. I think there's some more seasoned people that have come around.
I like seasoned.
Well, I mean, take Senator Kittleman, for instance, who took a leadership role on this and paid for it somewhat. But, kudos to him for taking a position on
that I think is right.
Right.
So no on four, no on five.
Well, can we go back to four? Because I need a little more help on four.
Okay.
On the
marriage equality.
Dream Act.
Dream Act.
So undocumented immigrants, is that illegals? Is that really what undocumented means?
Yes.
Okay.
That is a euphemism.
Okay.
According to some folks.
The notion of paying taxes, how do you pay taxes as an illegal? If you're an illegal, do you still get a Social Security number as an illegal?
I'm not sure whether it's an accurate Social Security number. I know we get a lot of tax revenue from folks who are never, ever going to
file a return.
Right. Because they don't have proper documents.
So they'll get withholding taken out, but they're not going to file a return because...
Exactly. Folks say to me, well, what is it about illegal you don't understand? Look, I hear you on that, but it's all I'm saying is there's a... it's not a one-way street here. Us to folks that don't have documents. And in fact, there's a lot of tax revenue that comes in that is never, ever applied to these folks because they don't have the proper papers.
Another question that came up to me was, and I think I understand this, is these kids, these students, have to also register with Selective Service, correct?
Correct.
Now, somebody said, well, how can you register for Selective Service if you're not a citizen? I said, I don't think that's a requirement.
Well, that's a little outside my agency, but...
I don't think
here's the point, that this is something like the marriage equality that I think the next generation is going to deal with much more calmly than we are. And obviously the feds need to work out something that makes sense so that everybody doesn't feel as if the law is being broken every time you turn around.
Okay. Go ahead, Paul. Are you done with those? Are you ready to talk about the big one yet?
Yeah, you know what? I guess I'll just give on Dream Act for now. I still have issues with it.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Yeah. And, you know, I run into a lot of people who come up to me and we talk about fiscal issues and they think, we're all very simpatico, because I want moderate centrist positions on the fiscal issues. But then I'll be standing around with the same group and someone will say, well, where are you on the Dream Act? I'll say, I'm for it. They get angry. They say, we don't want to, all that agreement we had with you on fiscal issues, take it all back. We don't want to deal with you if you're for the something that we think very emotionally about.
I think that's ridiculous.
An issue.
I think you should have the ability, as all of us, to have different positions on different things that we can agree on some agree on others.
Sensitive that there's a... right now we're at a point in our history where we're kind of switching over from one generation to the other, and so it's out there. And I certainly don't dismiss it or say that it's not legitimate. People have understandably strong feelings about issues like the Dream Act and like marriage equality. I wish we wouldn't let those things divide us so that we can't get our fiscal house in order and do what we need to do to create prosperity.
That's a good transition to seven, our fiscal house in order, because what this is being sold at by some of our colleagues or your colleagues down in Annapolis is that Maryland has some structural deficit issues.
We do.
And that this will help solve them.
Actually, it'll make them worse.
Yeah.
How it makes it worse. It's a little counterintuitive, but basically what we have in Annapolis is a spending problem. We have all sorts of good-intentioned, well-intentioned, great-sounding programs that are funded by the state, and we have not done the hard thing of prioritizing and making sure that these programs are funded efficiently and get good results. And every time we expand taxes, which we have done 23 times in the last 5 years, or expand gambling, which is more revenue, we take the pressure off the elected officials of solving the problem.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I'm a Democrat. I always thought it was kind of Republican rhetoric, frankly, when they said, you know what, we have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. We do have a spending problem in Maryland, and it's comes about from years and years of very loose, casual, because we were so prosperous, public budgeting. And as a result, in an odd way, frankly, expanding gambling hurts our ability to get our fiscal house in order.
I had a member of the House of Delegates tell me confidentially, it says that he believes that the majority of his colleagues don't even understand the budget.
Absolutely. I was on the appropriations for 20 years, I was a subcommittee chairman at the end. It's a little universe unto itself. We would spend more time debating dog leash laws than we would the state budget. I mean, really, the budget would go through in 45 minutes to an hour.
But that's how we get where we are today.
Well, yeah, it's, I mean, the legislators are good people. I've served with many of them. But the reality is that we don't spend a lot of time as legislators, unless you're on appropriations, on the fiscal stuff. And even on the appropriations, it's a part-time job. And the whole mindset is let's get in, fund what we need to fund. Let's measure our success by how much money we're spending on a given project. And very little attention is given to results and exactly what benefit the public gets from these programs. But the other thing with gambling is that all these promises about new funds for education are false. The money goes into the general fund. If it does go into the education trust fund, it generally is subtracted out the other side. So there's no net increase in education money,
right?
Number one. And the jobs that they promise, most of them are subtracted from other casinos because there'll be a contraction. If they put a big new casino in, it may hire 2,000 people, but 2,000 people around the state will lose their jobs.
Right. And there'll be construction jobs as they build it, but then they go away.
Yeah, and the construction jobs are not particularly significant when you look at the private sector unemployment in the state. So it's not a good deal for the state. The promises that have been made have been really inflated. And as the chief financial officer, I'm urging everyone to vote no on 7. And this is the only time in history we're ever going to have a fair fight on this because they made a big mistake and alienated one of the casinos. So these guys are coming in and funding the opposition.
Right, right.
And normally it's just a formality. You know, you go through the referendum on gambling, and gambling companies spend $10 million. We spend $1 million, and, you know, we're wiped out.
Right.
Well, this time the wolf pack got one of the wolves mad at them, you know, I'm...
Of course, that's been good for the state's economy, because they've poured a lot of money into the advertising and public relations industry here.
Well, we're spent three times more we're spent more in this referendum than the last three gubernatorial campaigns together.
Together, wow.
And if that doesn't get Howard County's good government hair on the back of your head up, nothing will, because these guys are a predatory, for-profit industry, and the fact that they can come in and spend money like this, my worry is that 7 wins, because if it does, I mean, Annapolis is bought, lock, stock, and barrel. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
So is your opposition to 7 strictly on the fact that we have a spending problem and we shouldn't be looking for new sources of revenue before addressing our spending problem, or is it more on the substance of gambling?
It is more on what the future of the state should be. I happen to think that if we're going to have a good economic development, job strategy should be built around our existing assets. Mm-hmm. Howard County is an asset, for example. Educated workforce is an asset. Our university system, our hospitals, our K-12 education program. Those are assets we can build a good economy around, such as Virginia, which is not as good as we are in some of those areas, but they take their assets, they relentlessly market them to produce jobs and economic development. That's what we should do. Instead, we're going after this casino option.
It's kind of like the lowest common denominator.
And well, it just doesn't work. It's not going to produce the jobs. It's not going to produce the education funding that's promised. It's not going to produce real revenue. I have written checks as comptroller for $266 million to the gambling companies to buy the slot machines. It's a little quirk in our law.
Right, right.
But the point is, that's taxpayers' money going out. I've only taken in $220 million. For education from the current program. So we're still in the red.
Right.
Ultimately we will get in the black. Right. But the point is that the amounts are not as much as promised. It's not new money for education. The jobs...
And gambling is inconsistent with those assets that you've described that we're not deploying the way we should.
Yes. And my major reason for being against this is how shameful I think it is for my elected colleagues to go on TV and show all these kids getting off of school buses and stating that this is for education.
I mean, this is for the kids.
You look at the funding, the wording of the referendum, and they actually mention education funding in the second line. Well, we all want education funding, but for God's sakes, don't let our leaders use our kids to justify this gambling thing.
And as you pointed out, even the teachers union is supporting it. So
I mean, I thought that was very significant, because if they thought that this was going to be new funding for education,
they'd be all over it.
They would hold their nose and be for it, unfortunately. But when people say, well, why does everybody support it now, all these elected officials? The reason is money. These gambling companies, as evidenced by this referendum where they're putting $70, $80 million in, they won't hesitate to put $2, $3 million into a politician's war chest.
Right.
That's like change under the sofa on their couch. I mean, it's just...
Nice couch.
But, you know, you get my point that if you follow the money, you're going to understand why all these great politicians that we respect and who are liberal and progressive and Democrats, why they do the bidding of these Las Vegas companies. It's money.
It's all about the money.
You have really redefined the position of the comptroller.
Thank you.
You've taken a very different role than your predecessors have. Is that about politics and your future, or is it about a role that you think this position should have that's different than what it's been in the past?
There are a bunch of people that want to run for comptroller if I'm moving on and running for another office. And I take that as a compliment, because I think I've made the job much more substantive and constructive and important than even my great predecessors, Louis Goldstein and William Donald Schaefer, did. And basically what we've done is just put my heart and soul into making the job a bully pulpit as well as the chief fiscal officer for the state. We've changed the agency tremendously and improved it as far as the tax collection and other aspects, but I've also taken advantage of the bully pulpit and spoken out, and people like that.
That's
great.
I don't think it's great for my political future necessarily, because everybody,
Let's talk
puts
about
arrows
that.
In my back. But
let's talk about that for a
that's
minute.
That's okay.
You talk about if you wanted to go to next office. Paul was sharing at lunch a poll that was taken recently.
Last weekend.
For the 2014 gubernatorial race, of which 2/3 of people have no opinion, which is not unusual. I mean, we're pretty far out.
Sure.
Undecided.
But of the remaining third, the numbers are pretty interesting. Paul, what was it again?
Anthony Brown, 10%. Peter Hughes, 7%. Doug Gansler, 5%. And Ken Ullman, 3%.
Well, I was at 0% before my last appearance on your show. And then I jumped up overnight. So
Francho
maybe,
who?
Maybe we'll...
Ken was on recently, too. So maybe he may have gone down as a result of being on the show. I don't know. You know, it works both ways.
Yeah, no. I saw those, and who knows what those numbers are. The poll numbers I like are some of these pollsters have polled out in the state and said, who is the politician in Maryland that's most trusted on fiscal issues? And by a large margin, it's me. And I take that as a real compliment from the voters and the constituents. They have confidence in my assessment of economic stuff. And that's really, you know, the duties of the comptroller.
But you've taken a pretty contrarian view to your party on this question 7 issue. I mean, this is...
Absolutely. They're just wrong on it. And I feel, you know, I...
That's all I like about you. Yeah. No ifs, ands, or buts. They're wrong.
Well, look at it from our side. I mean, I'm a Democrat. They're all Democrats. We're supposed to protect people.
It's not what we're doing.
Oh, my God. We're rolling the red carpet out for these predators from Las Vegas, and it's just too bad. Historically, the Democrats have always said no to these guys. We said okay on the lottery because it's publicly owned and in theory we can control it, but no on these casinos, particularly in inside the Beltway communities, we've said no. But now, because of these campaign contributions, they've flipped all the Democrats, and it's just, you know, Katie bar the door now. I mean, anything could happen if 7 is approved.
So let's talk about a little bit of the what-if scenarios, and we like to do that here on the show with our local elected officials, and, you know, it all trickles down. So you're obviously you have your eye on the gubernatorial seat.
We're looking very closely at it.
Okay. Predictions on next week for the president?
Well, I'm a big supporter of Obama. I mean, my goodness, here's someone who he doesn't need to be president. If he were sitting here, well, I'll bet you dollars to donuts if Barack Obama was sitting right here and I said to him, do you support casinos in Maryland? He would say no, because he's smart, thinks about things. So I hope Obama wins. It's a very tough election, though. Both sides have been at each other. So I'm hoping for the country that Obama's reelected. And 7 is defeated and 5 is defeated and Delaney is elected. Here's a sleeper of a race out in Western Maryland.
Yeah.
John Delaney is the kind of Democrat we need in elected office. He has private sector experience. He understands this whole issue of marketing Maryland's assets to create jobs. Doesn't like gambling. Very successful guy. We need people like him in the back room saying, guys, you know, it sounds good to our Democratic base, but it's really not good to demonize people that have been successful.
You think?
You know, that's we just need to keep our rhetoric under control so that we can govern and get results for our folks. So what else? Who else is on the ballot that I'm missing?
Let me see. How about the we got Senate race? I mean, Ben Cardin's probably...
Ben Cardin looks very strong. Ben Cardin is a fabulous guy.
Rob Sabani's all over the place.
Well, that may be, but I don't know him. But Ben Cardin, uniquely among all elected Democrats, is someone that I think embodies the kind of civility that I would like to see more of in politics.
Does Governor O'Malley survive the balance of his term if Obama gets reelected, or are the rumors of a potential cabinet seat have any merit in your mind?
I've heard those rumors. I just don't put any credence in them because being governor of Maryland's a great job, and he obviously wants to be president. I kid him a lot and say, hey, Martin, I don't mind you running for president, but do we have to pay for it? And
understand that here in Harris County.
So, you know, he's got a bright future. He's a charismatic, talented guy. But I don't see him moving on from the gubernatorial spot because he's very clearly signaled that he wants to be in the presidential mix, and I'm not sure being a cabinet officer really...
Right, better to fill out your term as an executive.
Yeah, do what people hired you to do, and, you know, I think he's got a tremendous amount of energy and potential, and some of it's been diverted to this national stuff, and so I think he, in the next couple of years, could actually do quite a bit of good for Maryland if he stayed at home.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you, guys. We're just about out of time here. We appreciate you coming by and having you back on.
It's great to have you back again.
Thank you, Dennis.
Hopefully, we'll have this conversation again sometime. But I'm with you on question 7, so we'll hopefully wrap that up.
And we trust when you make your final decision about your gubernatorial run, you'll come here to announce.
From the get-go, as long as I've got a cookie, I'll be happy to do it.
The cookie later.
We're going to make sure of it.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
That about wraps up yet another episode of And Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the Internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on November 16th with special guest Renee Foose, the superintendent of the Howard County Public School System, along with our regular blend of hyper-local news and commentary. We hope you'll join us.